behind the counterattack was called the nation-killing concept. After an atomic blitz, Colonel Dale O. Smith explained, a nation would die just as surely as a man will die if a bullet pierces his heart. The defense of Great Britain was one of Half Moon's central aims, and much of the atomic blitz was to be launched from British air bases. But that would only encourage the Soviets, one Pentagon official warned, to begin the war with a devastating, annihilating attack on Great Britain. Denied access to British airfields, American planes would be forced to use bases in Egypt, India, Iceland, Greenland, Okinawa, or Alaska. The limited range of B-29 and B-50 bombers might require some American crews to fly one-way suicide missions. It will be the cheapest thing we ever did, Major General Earl E. Partridge said. Expend the crew, expend the bomb, expend the airplane all at once. Kiss them goodbye and let them go. President Truman was given a briefing on Half Moon and the atomic blitz in May 1948. He didn't like either of them. Truman told the Joint Chiefs to prepare a plan for defending Western Europe without using nuclear weapons. He still hoped that some kind of international agreement might outlaw them. The Joint Chiefs began to formulate ERASER, an emergency war plan that relied entirely on conventional forces. A month later, the Soviets cut rail, road, and water access to the western sectors of Berlin. Truman now faced a tough choice. Defying the blockade could bring war with the Soviet Union, but backing down and abandoning Berlin would risk the Soviet domination of Europe. The U.S. military governor of Germany, General Lucius D. Clay, decided to start an airlift of supplies into the city. Truman supported the airlift, while the Joint Chiefs of Staff expressed doubts, worried that the United States might not be able to handle a military confrontation with the Soviets. Amid the Berlin crisis, work on ERASER was halted. Truman issued a series of directives outlining how nuclear weapons should be used, and the atomic blitz became the most likely American response to a Soviet invasion of Western Europe. The new strategy was strongly opposed by George Kennan and others at the State Department, who raised questions about its aftermath. The negative psychosocial results of such an atomic attack might endanger post-war peace for 100 years, one official warned. But the fiercest opposition to Half Moon and the similar war plans that followed it, Fleetwood, Double Star, Trojan, and Off-Tackle, came from officers in the U.S. Navy. They argued that slow-moving American bombers would be shot down before reaching Soviet cities. They said that American air bases overseas were vulnerable to Soviet attack. And most important, they were appalled by the idea of using nuclear weapons against civilian targets. The Navy had practical as well as ethical reasons for opposing the new war plans. Atomic bombs were still too heavy to be carried by planes launched from the Navy's aircraft carriers, a fact that gave the newly independent U.S. Air Force the top priority in defense spending. For more than a century, naval officers had regarded themselves as the elite of the armed services. They now resented the aggressive public relations efforts of the Air Force, the disparaging remarks about sea power, the books and articles claiming that long-range bombers had won the Second World War, the propaganda films like Walt Disney's Victory Through Air Power, with its jolly animated sequences of cities in flames and its tagline, "There's a thrill in the air." The Navy thought the atomic blitz was the wrong way to defend the free world, and at the Pentagon a battle soon raged over how the next war in Europe should be fought. Hoping to resolve the dispute, James Forrestal, who had become Secretary of Defense, appointed an Air Force officer, General Hubert R. Harmon, to lead a study of whether a nuclear strike would defeat the Soviet Union. In May 1949, the Harmon Committee concluded that the most recent American war plan, Trojan, would reduce Soviet industrial production by 30 to 40%. He would also kill perhaps 2.7 million civilians and injure an additional 4 million. Those were conservative estimates, not taking into account the fires ignited by more than 100 atomic bombs. But Trajan wouldn't prevent the Red Army from conquering Europe and the Middle East. Nor would it lead to the collapse of the Soviet Union. For the majority of Soviet people, the committee noted, atomic bombing would validate Soviet propaganda against foreign powers, stimulate resentment against the United States, unify these people, and increase their will to fight. Nevertheless, Harmon saw no realistic alternative to the current war plan. The atomic blitz was the only means of rapidly inflicting shock and serious damage on the Soviet military effort, and the advantages of its early use would be transcending. On August 29, 1949, the Soviets detonated their first atomic device, RDS-1, at a test range in eastern Kazakhstan. The yield was about 20 kilotons, roughly the same as that of the bomb dropped on Nagasaki, and for good reason. RDS-1 was a copy of the Mark III implosion bomb. While American policymakers worried and fretted and debated whether to share classified atomic information with the Soviet Union, a network of communist spies infiltrated Manhattan Project laboratories and simply took it. Soviet physicists like Yuli Borisovich Kariton were brilliant and inventive, but their task was made easier by the technical knowledge gained through espionage at Los Alamos, Hanford, and Oak Ridge. The United States also provided the Soviet Union with the means for delivering an atomic bomb. In 1944, three American B-29 bombers were forced to make emergency landings in Siberia after attacking Japanese forces in Manchuria. The planes were confiscated by the Soviets, and one of them, the General H.H. Arnold Special, was carefully disassembled. Each of its roughly 105,000 parts was measured, photographed, and reverse-engineered. Within 2 years, the Soviet Union had its first long-range bomber, the Tupolev 4. The plane was almost identical to the captured B-29. It even had a metal patch where the General Arnold had been repaired. News of the Soviet bomb arrived at an unfortunate moment. General Groves had assured the American people that the Soviet Union wouldn't develop an atomic bomb until the late 1960s.